Hello, everyone. Hola, mis amigos. You're listening to Oh My God, Hi, Hijo de Dios, Hola. With me, George Lopez, porque ¿sabes qué? Let's do the show, porque I got a lot of things to do. Tengo algo con la dry cleaner ahí, my kid Phelps, se pegó la cabeza y algo con esa Neosporin Paul. Oh My God, Hi. Welcome everybody to Oh My God, Hi with my man Brian Kelly.
Hey everybody.
You know, every time we start the podcast, I just like to take like a couple minutes and just say, you know, about what's kind of going on with me. You know, I live alone, spend a lot of time alone, and I spend a lot of time thinking. And you know, this year I'm going to be 60, and you and I have known each other for 20
and change.
But you know, I had the kidney transplant, and mm-hmm. you know, I'm doing all right. But that's right around my birthday, it's 16 years for that.
Wow.
So mortality, I'm not sure if I'm worried about it, but I'm feeling it, and I'm starting to miss being alive, if that sounds, because I'm going to be 60, and I've already had that kidney 16 years, so I'm not sure how long it's supposed to last. It's not going to last till I'm 80.
But it's doing great now, though, right? It's doing
fantastic. But in this last, maybe because of pandemic, I feel like I'm got a window of time where before I didn't feel like I had a window of time. You know, when I listen to music, remember I told you I was listening to all those songs? Like, they mean to me something more now. You know, I got the stuff going on with the house that we'll talk about, with the movement and all that. But in my heart, in my soul, I mean, I want to talk to Ann and Mayan in the house I used to live in. So that's, if you think that's bullshit,
wow,
going to hang out with them. I haven't done that in, since we got divorced.
That's so a step, been 12 right?
years. So I'm feeling a little bit, and this is the first place I've said it, but I'm feeling a little bit of my, I wouldn't say mortality, but I know that I don't have original parts, so I'm not going to go 90. I'm going to go, I'm thinking like 75. You think 15 years goes by fast. So it's not like I'm going to turn it up and start drinking every night. I'm actually going to start to enjoy more of my life. So thank you for tuning in to Oh My God, Hi. This is going to be a fun show. And enough with the mamadas. And let's get down to some real facts and not bullshit like what I just spent 5 minutes talking about.
It was beautiful. But let's get into it. Let's start with our actual news.
I'm probably going to Disneyland every day in May.
that might work. Right?
Probably, they're not even going to be open.
Share the wealth with your mask
on. I'm going to go to the little massage parlor right there. Happy massage, happy star, but they close.
And they're all like
Panda Express now, but I'm probably going over there every day.
Sweet. All right. Well, with actual news, we talked about it before. What it is, it's just crazy news lines that we found throughout the country, and they're actual news sources that we got them from. And starting out from theinsider.com, it's just perfect right now. Two Florida women dressed up as grannies, that's what they said in the line, try to get a COVID-19 vaccine.
Yeah, so what?
So they
dressed up like grannies in Florida and put a goddamn fucking swimsuit on. Everybody's 100 years old. You have to make yourself 115. You know, you could be like, they said grannies. Like you say, like I'm almost 60. Nobody's come over to my house or my doctor hasn't even called me about getting a COVID test. And everybody says, I feel like I'm the girl or the dude that fucks anything because nobody's, hey, man, have you been tested? And I'm like, no. They're like, hey, stay away from me. You fucking cesspool.
Throwing COVID.
And I was at the doctor today, and they didn't say like this. And even my nurse said, you got your shot. I said, yeah, no, Dr. Jordan hasn't said anything. He goes, he hasn't? So I feel like I'm walking around with syphilis.
You got the syphilis?
No, but of course, listen, and in New York, white people were going to the hood and Latino areas to try to get in line. They were using they can't use shoe polish. I think they were using horchata. They're on a towel. They're wiping their face with horchata. Uh-huh. But of course, listen, if there's a way for people to take advantage of their privilege, they're going to do it. Dressing up like grannies, dressing up like Latinos, dressing up as black people, and dressing up like the people that, black people that hired white people so they could sell their house. Because if the people that wanted to buy the house saw that black people owned it, they wouldn't buy it.
Yeah, right? That's crazy.
What is this, fucking Gone with the Wind?
It's true. They said, it's funny, they overdid it, obviously. They said the pair presented authentic vaccination cards. And then the workers were about to inoculate the pair, and they noticed they, quote, looked funny, which is nice, and then called them out. So they way overdid it and looked way, way older than they need to, and it was gone.
They looked way older than they needed to, shit.
Right?
They should have just walked behind them and screamed in their ear, and if they didn't piss, they fucking got them out of line.
Right? They said they used their real names on the vaccination cards, but listed fake birthdays.
They should have taken a swab that they used for COVID, put it around their genitalia where the urine comes out, a dick or the vagina, tap it, test it, and if it tested positive for urine, they were elderly. But if there was no urine on the swab, then they were lying and pretending to be old, and they got them out of line. All right, what's the next one?
This one's from the Huffington Post, actually. I think you'll like this one. A Florida man proposes.
That's the thing that everybody says, a Florida man.
A Florida man. And this guy, I don't know what he was, but they call him a Florida man, and he proposes using a ring stolen from another lover. So he basically...
He's basically a man.
Well, yeah. A Florida man stole an engagement ring and wedding bands from a girlfriend and used them to propose to another girlfriend.
That's cool.
You're like, what's
okay, listen. All right. Okay. Let's say you go to the car dealership and you enter in a contract with the dealership and you say, I'd like to get into a contract with you. I promise you that I'm going to take a car from you, and as long as you and I maintain this relationship, I keep the car. But if I don't pay for the car, you're going to come in the middle of the night, and tomorrow when I'm taking the kids to fucking Legoland, the car is going to be gone in the morning, and you know there's going to be a dew spot where it's dry where the car was, and around the car, and you're going to be like, fuck, man, they can't repossess my car. How come? Because I wasn't paying, and they were calling me, and I didn't call them back, much like a relationship. So, ladies, you break up with a guy, got this fucking big-ass ring, you tell all your friends, I'm engaged, look, I got the ring. And you enter into a contract, and if something happens where the contract is not fulfilled to the next level, which is marriage, you keep the ring. It doesn't work like that.
Well, the thing is, they were still together. It said their investigation.
Never mind.
Their little part about that forgetting to break up with her.
I look like a stupid ass going on 5 minutes about. Listen, and I just want to say, Mary Bell, I'll be home tonight around 7. And I'm going to stop at Carrollton Brothers. Going on my with a Julie. Every kiss begins with J. That's my deal. God, it gets it all wrong.
Look. They said their investigation started early this year when a woman from Orange City, Florida, told detectives that she had discovered her boyfriend was actually engaged to someone else. When she looked up on the fiancé's Facebook page, she noticed a photo of her wearing a wedding band engagement ring that was identical to her own in a prior marriage. So she saw on Facebook, she just saw the things that belonged to her, and she was still with this guy. Yeah. So she reached out to the Orange
but
City.
But you know what? I could still say that relationship could be salvaged.
Well, you never know. He was the fiance who lives in Orlando told detectives she had been duped.
What about, let's say that area there is one of the most prized possessions.
Absolutely.
And let's say that, you know, men clearly don't honor it as much as women do, some women. So that area there is very special. So you meet a woman and you're going to enter into romance, and that really you belong to each other, which that's part of it. And she's been with, you know, you find out one night, you know, on her Facebook that she's, you know, she blew the tennis team of Burbank High, and then you're like, man, fuck her, I'm gonna start taking shit from her.
And that's must be what he did.
Alleged,
this
I
guy,
mean, some people like, you know, he, I'm like that. I don't think anybody else is.
He said their Orange City woman, which is awesome. He used two different names and everything. The Orange City woman reached out to the fiance, who returned some of items, and they both called it off with Davis, who also went by the names Joe Brown and Marcus Brown. He was Joe Brown with one girlfriend, Marcus Brown with the other, and his name was something completely different. Davis.
So white dude using brown?
No, he was black dude. He's a black guy.
Oh, I wish you would have said that at the beginning. We wouldn't have had a...
Florida, a black Florida man. That's how it should have started.
Come
black
on!
Florida man proposes.
Listen, if you don't say African-American or you don't say Latino Florida man, if you just leave that blank, that's a white guy. Everybody knows that.
I guess. And he's still... How about
around Christmas and someone says, I went to Target, they had a black Santa Claus. Instead of saying, they had a Santa Claus.
And the black Santa Claus would make you...
Don't you say that?
I guess I do, yeah.
If somebody says, you know, hey, man, I took my kid to the park and they had a Santa Claus there. Oh, yeah, I didn't know that. Well, it was a black Santa Claus, but I mean, they had a Santa Claus there. But I mean, like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's not me. I mean,
yeah, that's just mad at me, normal human nature.
I'm used to people being mad at me. I'm just saying, that's why I wanted to do one of these shows, because I think, I can't, you know, I'm not going to say that all people think like that, but if you look at it, yeah, man. And you know, you watch the news and they say, today, 17 Latinos were arrested in the back of a truck as they tried to get into, you know, Houston, and they got pulled over because the registration they found. They don't say that there's da-da-da or a gunman or this.
Yeah.
And they just,
it's identifier.
It's all color-coded.
An identifier for...
That's why whenever there's a person of color doing the news, which before it was only two white people doing the news because, you know, to most of America, when you guys talk, everybody believes you. So then as more people, you know, like let's say Lester Holt or Anna Navarro, who's a friend of mine, or, you know, Brian Gumbel or who else? I think that's it. No. And then they say, you know, Connie Chung.
Yeah.
Or Elizabeth Vargas or, you know, whoever. And then if there's someone of color, the white person's always the anchor. And you know why they call that person the anchor? Because he sits there and says, I'm not leaving until we account for all the fucking cameras and shit that's in here.
He holds it down.
Yeah, he makes sure nothing's missing at the end.
Well, he's still out there. Old Davis here, by the way. Just according to the sheriff's office, the jail where Davis previously was booked had a tattoo on his left arm that said, only God can judge me. So that's what his run is. But
let me tell you this. Showtime did a documentary called About Love. It was like and it was really good. I love the docuseries. So this was about a white dude who would meet women on Facebook. And you listen, guys, if you think you're going out and you're going out with your friends, you're trying to escape to Vegas, or if you're trying, there was a newscaster here in LA that said he was going to visit his sister in the South, and then he didn't go, and he went to Vegas to play golf, and she found out, and they had an altercation that made it in the news. If you're going to be mistruthful to someone, if you're going to tell them a lie, don't put it on your Facebook and don't put it on social media and don't buy a t-shirt and don't, you know, buy something from there that's going to date you. When I was in high school, I was in a relationship with a young lady, my first love. I loved her. I still care about her, but she was great. And when, you know, we were still in a relationship, so like we were together like 2 years. But the first year, we were looking at pictures at her house and her kitchen table with her mom. And, you know, it was a real picture. And she saw this picture and quickly, like, she ditched it and tried to hide it. And I said, what's that? And she's like, it's nothing. Uh-huh. And I go, no, let me see it. And she wouldn't let me see it. And she fought for it. I go, let me see it. And when I finally saw it, it was her and another guy holding hands. And she said, that was from a long time ago. And then the guy was wearing a concert t-shirt from a concert that was just a few months before. And Detective Lopez solved the case.
Hi, he may have been wearing a newspaper.
And she was trying to dip.
Oh, no.
And I caught her. They were holding hands. And she goes, it was nothing. And they were, and then you look again, and they're holding hands.
Ah, so where'd it go from there?
She married a dude that picked her up on the street, had four kids, and she lives in Santa Clarita.
All right.
And Big Daddy right here is on
Big
the
Daddy?
Walk of Fame. Me, fat bastard. I'm on the Walk of Fame. I'm in syndication. You know, movie star of an Emmy, talk show, animated. I have several homes and cars.
All over a picture.
And she's out there with, you know, Huckleberry Finn.
Dun, dun. All right, last story. We got one more story.
Please,
I think you'll like this.
It's going to be like this every week. I don't
know exactly.
We bring up horrible memories.
Wrenching your heart every week.
Hop to it,
this one comes from New Zealand Herald, and this is a great one. 30 Taliban militants killed in explosion during bomb-making class. At least 30 Taliban militants have died in Afghanistan after they blew themselves.
Can you imagine the thousand that would go if it was an online class?
Yeah, exactly.
They teach you in person. They're like, "Hey, let's go make bombs." Yeah, sure. What? What's it? Send me the Zoom. No, it ain't on Zoom, man. You have to go in person. Fuck you, I ain't going over there.
You see the little screens just going black one by one.
Fuck you guys pulling down the blinds and two things connect and fuck.
Oh God, that's awesome.
Huh? I mean, really, man, you're sitting around, the guy's like, okay, everybody quiet. All you gotta do is take the C4 and be very gently trips over the thing. Boom!
Yeah, right. Anderson, it was the green wire. It says, news agency, press news agency, said fighters died when improvised explosive devices, IEDs, they were learning to construct explosives inside, it exploded inside a mosque. Obviously, quoting a release from the Afghan army. So a blast happened on Saturday morning in the mosque, and it took out their six foreign nationals. The bodies of the six foreign nationals could not be identified because they were blown to bits.
Okay, I got a great, you know how they, you know, Reese's Pieces is like chocolate and peanut butter?
Yeah.
Okay, that was so let's say you got an IUD, like a birth control device.
Yeah, okay.
And you put a little bit of C4 in it, not a lot. And you put a little bit of C4, and then the ladies have it, and they put it inside them, and they tell the dude, if you ejaculate in me, it's going to activate the C4, and we're both dead. So if you say you're going to pull out, because...
if not, you're a suicide bomber.
We're powder.
Oh.
Right?
I think it's a great idea.
Then women can say they have it in, and they don't. And the dude's just going to pull out because he's going to say, right? Do I believe her?
And it doesn't count.
Nobody believes anything they say.
It doesn't count.
Gotcha.
So
I have the mind of like a dude that's like Ty Cobb, like a Chicano Ty Cobb, just the worst views on people.
But that is the actual news. Thank you very much for
I feel better informed.
So great. Let's get moving to our next segment, though. We're going to listen to the voicemails that listeners of this show have left for you.
And have these been edited, or is this real? Because I'll leave one for them.
I think we can do either. They got a few on each. These are voicemails coming from people who actually listen to the show. 818-533-1843 if you want to be a part of it as well. Here's our first one.
Kilo, what's going on, man? It's Jesse from L.A. I saw your post on IG. I don't know how much you've talked about it, but I would love to hear all of the... The goings-on and traditions of the Brownie Cup, man. I'm sitting here with my daughter. Love to watch golf. Say hi, Mama. And we'd love to hear about that, man. I'll definitely be tuning in to your podcast. Later, man.
The Brownie Cup trophy and the Brownie Cup itself was created at Pebble Beach because... when you and I were doing the amphitheater at the end of the year, after touring all year, right after Christmas, I would say to you, hey, man, before we go to the amphitheater, let's go to Pebble Beach and play. We'll come back the same day.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we start to invite some friends, Anthony and Don and, you know, the people that we took over there. But then, you know, kind of accidentally one of them or one of us ingested some brownie or candy that had weed in it, and right around the eighth hole, that guy was not playing as well as he was in the beginning. So then when he teed off on 10, he kind of rolled it, and then we were like, what's up, dude? And he goes, oh, man, I ate that weed. And he goes, I said, oh, wait a minute, why don't we all eat it? And then... it'll probably kick in by the 10th hole, so we'll eat it on the 9th tee, play the 9th hole, go to the turn, get a double vodka cranberry, everybody. Whatever anybody ingested on the back nine, everybody had to ingest. So if you were losing, you could once say, why don't we all have another double vodka and cranberry, and everybody had to have it. You could only do that once, almost like phoning a friend. So then in the beginning, you play 9 holes completely sober, and then you play the back nine under the influence of a marijuana brownie and a double cranberry, and then you count every single stroke, and then at the end, we would go to the tap room, and then the first year we did it, you were there, right?
I believe I was the first year.
And then the first year we did it, we didn't have a name or a trophy, and then across at Pebble Beach, they have that guy, Kip, that has that memorabilia thing, and I walked over there. That guy would sell his mom if he could get a Pebble Beach logo on her. And I found this old trophy from the 30s that was kind of a cup, and I bought it. It was kind of expensive. I think it was like $3,000. Mm-hmm. And then I walked it over to all of us at lunch, and I said, here's the trophy. And then we sat around thinking of a name, and somebody said, like, Cannabis Cup or the Weed Invitational, and I think it was someone else. I don't want to say their names for their privacy, but actor, and I think he said, what about the Brownie Cup? And then that was the first year. So the winner of that year was me, I think.
You won the very first, the inaugural?
I won the first Beautiful. One. And then we decided that we would play every year at the end of the year, and then that trophy would go to the winner of the Brownie Cup for that year, and then he would get it back. So I won, Anthony won, mm-hmm. Don mm-hmm. Cheadle won, and currently the Brownie Cup is with Mr. D.L. Hughley. So, which I would contend that since he didn't play with us, and one other thing in the Brownie Cup is everybody had to play together so that you couldn't say, yeah, no, I drank what you guys drank. And I don't believe D.L. Hughley.
Check the rules.
I'm going to say I'm with the people at Fox News that I don't believe in that word he said. So that's the Brownie Cup.
It's most fun you'll ever have on a golf course, by the way.
Remember that time we played at Madison and we teed off at 10 and it got dark at 5:30 and we didn't finish.
Hey, that trophy's more coveted than the claret jug.
It really
These guys
is.
Are going for it. Yeah. I mean, seriously, it's a big deal to win this thing.
And a couple of years, because of the schedule, we didn't play. We're going to try to play. Even some of the other guys say, how about that Brownie Cup? So when I would walk down every morning to get coffee and I would see it, I felt like a champion. Yep. And now that it's not with me, I feel like...
I got to get it.
I feel like a loser.
It's so great, though. The first nine is so quiet. Everybody's mellow and kind of
You're
focused.
Trying to save them up. You're trying to save, like, points. Like, you know, they go, what'd you take there? I had a bogey. And if someone says, oh, man, I tripled, those things will come back. And bite you.
Because you know 10, 11, 12, that's when you're going to fall apart.
And this is how Cheech played one year, and you think, you know, Cheech is a marijuano, you know? And, you know, who's more, you know, so you go, if you were to say Anthony, Don, George, and Cheech, who wins? I think all the money would have been on Cheech. But Tommy Chong said after, how did Cheech play? He goes, oh, I played horrible. He goes, yeah, because Cheech can't eat edibles, man. Like you know, he wigs out. And Cheech said one time that somebody gave him an edible and that Cheech had it in the room like he was trying to relax. And then the room service guy knocked on the door. When he opened the door, he said it was like the Grim Reaper with the pitchfork and the whole black face with the two eye holes. Cool. He goes, man, let's do it. And, you know, he said he can't play. And I remember I gave Cheech a dozen golf balls, Callaways. And he fucking probably used 11 of them on the fucking 12th tee. I said, hey, puto, you have to use all of them on one hole. And then Dom was like, pull the plug on him. Like, hey, man, stop counting Cheech's strokes because there's no way that he would come back and win. But he did play. And Anthony Kim presented the trophy one year.
Oh, brilliant.
At a Mexican restaurant in the
so
desert.
So fun.
And it's been great. One of the greatest things we do and most
That's
fun things.
A
we do
great that. Idea. That's okay. Brilliant.
That's a good one. ¿Qué más?
All right. And next.
My name is Patricia. I'm from Boston. And I just wanted to call and say, first of all, I'm a huge fan. And second of all, I just wondered if you could give me a little bit of dating advice. Just, you know, from someone who has lived a full, fulfilling life and probably has a lot more experience than me. And from the male perspective, I've been talking to this guy for like 6 months. And, you know, it's COVID, it's quarantine. And he was very much pushing to see me in person, physically, you know, all that. And, you know, finally hung out inside together, right? And then, you know, ever since then, he's been just kind of like distant, but still checks in and still says out of the blue, hey, how's it going? I want to see you, but I can't because COVID. Basically, at what point do I just say, okay, he got what he wanted, he's gone, whatever. What point do I stop responding, basically? Like, is this just going nowhere, or is it truly just a COVID problem? What would you do in your circumstance if you were this dude? All right, let me know. Thank you. I'm so excited to hear from you.
What do you want to – what would you say? Let them hear what you have to say, and then I'll answer, because I already know what I'm going to say. What are you going to say?
If you're the guy. She asked if you're
the
guy.
Or the woman. I mean, how could she say that she gave herself to that dude? And she's like, what would you do if you were the guy?
The guys.
I would stop calling you.
No, what the guy's going to do, he's going to go around and do what he needs to do. And then when there's nothing else around, he knows he can give a call, in my humble opinion. He'll give a ring when he's ready to give a ring. He's not going to jump on it. It sounds like everybody's a little different, but she sounds like she pegged him. He got in there, and that was it.
And, well, I think that's right. And, you know, there's different levels of relationships. So if it's just a sexual thing, which clearly, to her, she didn't want the dude to come over because it's COVID. Like,
yeah.
Get to have people coming over with a baby, all kind of fluids everywhere. Hey, take it easy.
COVID-D.
You know? So I would say that, you know, you have to say what you want. But, I mean, for the whole world, it's been a time where you know, so many people have lost their lives. That, aside from that, like, it's not the best time to start a relationship. It's not the mm-hmm. best time to have somebody to rely on, because there's just, you know, you would want people to get tested. Like, mm-hmm. people don't come over to my house. A lot of people don't go over to your house, or nobody goes to any restaurants. And if you're working in any type of business, you got to get tested. I was doing a show this week, and I had four tests, and wow. I was there 5 days.
Wow.
So I would say, you know, God bless you. Thank you for being a fan and all that. But I think, you know, if you wanted to have him be a boyfriend, then you should not have given in to him. But if you wanted him to just be, you know, then, you know, you did the right thing. But clearly it sounded like that wasn't your thing. And now, like you said, he got what he wanted, like any guy that gets what he wants.
Yeah. But you could always test the theory, though. You can call him and say, hey, you want to come over and see how that lays out, and then you'll know for sure. But what would you do if you're her? What do you do if you're her?
I think I would do what you said. I think I would play the game with them,
yeah,
and say, you know, lead them, you know, just do what you do and just say, hey, you know, I miss you. I thought we had a great night. You know, let's see each other. And I bet you tell that guy, you know, can you be here in an hour because I'm leaving tomorrow out of town. I bet that dude will be there in an hour.
He'd find a way.
And that'll tell you exactly what he's about.
Let's queue up another one. Here we go.
Hey, George. My name is Tony. I saw a show that you were hosting back in 1992 at the Laugh Factory. There's a huge line. You were like the MC or something like that, introducing the comics. But I always thought you were a stand-up guy, man. My late wife at that time was, she was disabled. She had a muscular, a hereditary disease. And, so she couldn't stand in the line. So, we asked if she could sit in the little cubby area right there before you get into the, Laugh Factory. And, so you brought her a chair out for her to sit down. And you brought her a drink. You didn't bring me shit, but you made it good and comfortable for her. And with that, I always thought you were the stand-up dude after that. A guy with a lot of heart. I love your comedy, man. Keep it up. And, man, I want you to get a talk show again. Fuck. So, anyhow, thanks, George. You're a good dude, man.
Don't use profanity, puto. Hey, so, yeah, you know what? That's a really good question. I mean, you know, you and I, we worked together at the Punchline in Sacramento, mm-hmm. and you know that I would tell somebody, hey, go get the last four people at the end of the line and bring them in, like people that were clearly not going to get in.
Yeah, all the time.
So, you know, I've done that before, and I've paid people's bills and mm-hmm. done whatever.
Bought them drinks, did the people. Whole nine, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, the reason I wouldn't bring you a drink is because, you know, you're not a woman, and, you know, she needed a chair, and what woman doesn't need a drink? I thought she's probably with you. I'm trying to bring her 5 drinks. Right. So yeah, I appreciate the very kind words about a stand-up guy. I wouldn't know about that, but I always have been kind to. Well, not consent, not always, but maybe in the last 15 years more than before.
Well, I've only been around for those days, but I've seen you do amazing stuff for people that just didn't ask for anything.
That show was called Que Locos. Mike Robles, who was a comedian, I think he was out of Texas, he put it together. Que Locos was on Galavision, mm-hmm. and everybody was on that thing, all the Latino comedians. And I think was I the only host, or I think Mike Robles was the host. I think they asked me to host it. I probably wouldn't have done it if I wasn't the host, but I held out to host. It was one of the few things I did end up, maybe the first real TV gig I had where I was hosting something. But Galavision was a cable company, like a Latino cable company. And I'm going to tell you, like, if that cable company had been handled correctly or had people running it correctly, I think it could have been like the Latino Def Jam, because you know, Gabriel Iglesias was on there, uh-huh. Emilio Rivera, every kind of, you know, I think Freddie Soto and Mencia,
wow.
And Rudy Moreno and all the guys and, you know, guys that were, you know, really funny then and didn't get a chance to, you know, go further because, you know, it's hard in comedy when comedy is just comedy. But as a Latino in comedy, it's much, much harder. So, but that was a great show. They even had a tour, and we did shows. I, Paul Rodriguez was in there too, and I think later on that Paul actually got the idea to do, like, you know, he got Kings of Comedy from Latin Kings of Comedy from Kings of Comedy, of course.
Of course, yeah.
And then he screwed us all out of the money.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, no.
Of course.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't care. Hey, Paul Rodriguez, you owe myself and Cheech and whoever else was on that show. I can't remember that far back. But, you know, we're not friends anyways. But so let's not make it say that money came between us. I didn't like you and you didn't like me before or around or since the Kings of Comedy. So why don't you be a fucking man and pay your fucking debts, Sese?
And there you have it.
The next one.
And next.
Hey, George. My name's Simon from New York City. Wanted to ask, what is the coolest thing you've ever done in your comedy career? Whether it was a show or being on TV or whatever. I just want to know what your favorite experience is in your whole long career. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Simon from New York. Or Simon. What's up, puto?
Simone.
Simon.
Simon. Simon says, hey, take that trash out. What would you say it is?
Oh,
I mean,
man.
I could, you know, you.
I'd have to say that the performing in front of Obama, maybe, or the presidents?
No.
No?
No way.
Selling out Radio City a number of times? That's big. Got a lot of good ones.
The sitcom, The Tonight Show.
Oh, I was thinking he was talking shows, like comedy.
What's a heap? I think he said the best. You know what I'm going to say? It's hard to say, man. I'm going to say because as a teenager in San Fernando, that every day at 10 o'clock in the summer of 1975 and 76, me and Guillermo and Andy and Ernie and sometimes Andy would drive to Hollywood every day, and we'd walk. We'd drive up and down Hollywood Boulevard. Then we'd get out. Then we'd go get coffee and get a donut. Then we'd walk up and go look at the stars. And then we'd go into some stores. Then we'd yell at putos, and then we'd take off and go back. But it was kind of like the outing of the day.
Yeah.
And you know, when you see all those stars on Hollywood Boulevard, you look and see the biggest names. You know, Frank Sinatra. You see everybody, you know, Michael Jackson, everybody is on there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Kinks had that song, Celluloid Heroes, which I loved.
Yeah.
And then you hear that, and me being kind of like a fan of Hollywood, you know, I'm a fan of Hollywood,
big time,
and all those things mean a lot to me. Mm-hmm. So I would say that the thing that means the most to me would probably be one of the things that just seemed, it's all seemed kind of like anything insurmountable, the odds that something good happens. But I'm going to say that when I would go to Hollywood Boulevard, I would see George Burns' star, and I would stand there and look down, and I would imagine that it said George Lopez and not George Burns. And every day I went by, and I, like, touched it, you know, fucking Latino day. I go and touch that door for good luck. That fucking door right there. You know, so remember how we do that? Yeah. I used to walk to school and put a rock by the thing.
Oh, that's stupid.
So I would say that, you know, back then, you know, because one thing gets the other. Like the TV show got the specials, and the specials got kind of the talk show, and then the animation show got the other movies and all that stuff. So like one thing builds on anything. Mm-hmm. But one, that's one thing that's like 1975 versus 2006. That's the widest gap between wanting something and having it happen. So I would say that the Hollywood Walk of Fame on right in front of the Kodak Theater by the Sephora, on the day of the 100th episode of the George Lopez Show, and Viva Ragosa was mayor, my cast was there, Sandra was there, and I, Johnny Grant, and everybody was very happy, and it had rained like, you know, the first part of the week, and they put a tent up, they put like a tent up there, and then that morning, I looked outside and it was beautiful, man. I was like, wow, I stopped crying. And then, you know, I was...
Brilliant.
And then I, you know, I was thanking everybody and thanking everybody on the thing. And then I looked over and I saw the guys I grew up with.
And crazy.
I started crying. I lost it.
Wow.
The guys that I would go to Hollywood Boulevard with in 1975 and 76. And I think, yeah.
Ah, amazing,
and
right?
Mine was there and I'm like, everybody was there.
Yeah.
So... great question, long fucking answer, and thank you. You know, I like all those hole-in-the-wall places, man. Like, you know, when we were going to the improv in the 80s, if we had money, if Ernie and I had money, we would go to Astros on Santa Monica Boulevard and like, oh, man, Fairfax or right around there. So sometimes I would say we would go to the improv, and sometimes I got on stage, sometimes I didn't. And as we were driving, leaving the improv, I'd say, how much money do you have? And he'd go, you know, I have $15. And if I had like $10, I'd go, hey, let's go to Astro. So we'd go in there and we'd eat. And I still go there. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about going there in the next few days because, you know, that, it's just different to me. Like, it feels like, you know, I go to Carrillo's in San Fernando. I go to the Panería. I found a Panería over here in L.A. But, you know, Astros and the Olympic Cafe that was on Alvarado, I used to go there. There's an Astros by Paramount, and there's a Holiday Burger, which is kind of like the Astros on Devonshire right off the 405. And that's where I would go with those big-ass onion rings that look like, you know, dune buggy steering wheel.
Yeah.
So there's a place called, is it called Tom's or right there on Magnolia?
I believe that's what it's called.
So Tom's. I find the places that have like the great fries, the great pastrami. Like, remember that? We're like, oh man, I think it's great.
Outstanding stuff. Yeah.
Wonderful, right? So from the first episode we did, I said, hey, let's go over to this place. And as we're driving, I'm driving the Range Rover, and I tell you that I had the Cayenne with the rims that Jesse James gave me. And that when I went in there, as I was leaving, I scratched the rims of the Cayenne and those things. And as I was pulling out, I just gotten them. And I think that I'm out of the drive-thru. And when I turn, you hear, and this was like 2004, 2005. And I'm like, ah! And to me, like, I left the food. I didn't eat the food. I went home. I would keep walking by the car thinking, it didn't look that bad, Mr. Superficial. Like, I scratched, you know, I punched somebody in the face, I don't think twice. I scratched the rim. It bothers me, you know, for like 17 fucking years. So when we're going over there in the Range Rover, I tell you.
He told me the story as we're making a left into the drive-thru. He's telling me the story. Man, I scratched my rims so many years ago. Killed me, man. My rims, my brand new rims. And then
I order, and as I'm pulling out, I think I'm far enough ahead, and I did it again.
He scuffed him.
And then Brian's like, oh, and I said, no, that's not a big deal. And inside, I'm like, why that stupid ass does that? And I thought I was far enough ahead again. And I turned, you had thing, and you're like, it didn't sound like it was that bad. The whole half the rim, babe.
It just vibrated.
Like one of those goddamn black and white cookies, man. Like one side's black and the other one's scraped, it's white.
Oh, it's so great. And then we get to George's house and he goes, I think I could color that one up with a magic marker with the Sharpie.
You know what I end up using? You know what I end up using to touch it up? Black toner, black polish.
Oh, brilliant!
Because I used to do my toenails black when I had a little diabetic reaction. No, I don't have diabetes. But, you know, when I wanted to, I couldn't get there for a pedicure, I just cover them up.
Brilliant.
You know, sometimes people cover their house even though they're not fumigating it.
Just tent it up. We have a surprise guest on the line, and is that who I think it is?
Oh, good. You know why? Because as we were hanging out with him, I thought, this guy would be very informative for our audience and for you and I.
Yes, to say the least.
You know, if something happens to you or you're accused of something and you have to defend yourself, you need a defense attorney. So a defense attorney can be for something really serious or for something that is, you know, I think Eddie will do it. So Eddie Gomez, Eddie is our guest. Eddie, how long did you practice law?
32, 33 years.
Goodness, wow.
Okay, so, and when you were growing up, did what fascinated you to, what brought you to law, do you think? Was your dad a lawyer? Was your uncle a lawyer? Was your mom's side family lawyers?
No, we had a family friend that was an accountant and another family friend who was a doctor. But my interest in law happened when I marched in some Martin Luther King visited San Francisco, I think, when I was 16 or so, or 15. And it occurred to me in the civil rights movement, all the movers and shakers were lawyers. And so I thought, I want to be a lawyer.
Good point.
Or I want to be a doctor.
Yeah. So when you went to school, I guess, you know, I knew I was going to be a lawyer and I knew I was going to be a doctor, but you had your smarts. You got through, right? You got through easy and you started to focus on your major and you just had to decide on a college. And where did you decide to go to college?
I wanted to go to the University of San Francisco. I was San Francisco born and raised and I didn't want to really leave San Francisco. So I got accepted to various schools, but the fact that I got into University of San Francisco made the choice easy for me.
That was great. You know, didn't Bill Russell go to University of San Francisco?
Absolutely.
When they had
they won an NCAA championship there.
You know what? I always thought that the University of San Francisco, which back then, just like I thought the Golden State Warriors was a great name, but I also thought that the University of San Francisco was a great name for a college. Like that, you know, like over there, a lot of things in San Francisco, like at golf, they have the San Francisco Club.
Yeah,
basic. And yeah, just really into the city, like, you know.
Yeah,
like LACC. And yeah, so I think that's one of the reasons why there might be a rift between, you know, LA and San Francisco. Never call it Frisco or San Fran.
Oh, yeah.
San Francisco.
That's right.
I remember the comedian Rudy Moreno, and I took him to work with me at the Punchline. I said, "Hey, man, whatever you do, do not refer to San Francisco as Frisco or San Fran." And his fat ass went up there,
and he said,
"It's my first time in Frisco," and I heard all this yelling and booing, and I'm changing, and I'm like, "What's the matter?" And the guy comes in, and closes the door behind him, and goes, "He just said Frisco." Stupid ass. Okay, so
you dug your hole.
And then you had to pick a type of law, and why did you pick defense law? Because of that? Because of the march?
Well, the first thing I did was majored in college as an accounting specialist because I knew that to become a lawyer, there were a bunch of other steps. And I figured I needed something to fall back on. And I like doing accounting. And I like working with numbers. And I like saving people money on taxes. So I did that as my major and then applied to law schools after that. And got into every law school I applied to. And I went to one in San Francisco that was unheralded. But I saw the work they were doing in the community, and I wanted to go to a school like that that did work in the community as opposed to just being a glorified Western Harvard or something like that.
Yeah, I think I've known you 16 years.
I was kind of socially active.
Yeah, I've known you 16 years. I don't think I knew any of this. Okay, so as a defense attorney, what did you love about it, and what did you not, or what did you get you know, criticized for being a defense lawyer?
I love the action. I was in court every day, and when you're talking about your case or representing somebody, you're the center of attention, and I like that. And I liked controlling the courtroom because that's something I learned in law school from my criminal defense teacher, that you got to control the courtroom or you're lost if you let somebody else control it.
Right.
Wow.
It's like tennis.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's... I've had to hire a defense attorney a couple of times. One was very, very...
Sorry to hear that.
One was... Thank you. I know. Thank
you're
you.
Right. Condolences.
I remember Arsenio said, I don't have to fight because I have a defense attorney on retainer. I thought that was a good joke. And then I actually had to go to this lawyer with a check for $100,000 just to sit in the chair.
Oh, wow.
And then I was going to Laker games, and that person came up to me and just kind of walked by and pulled my jacket. And then she called me and said, sorry, I didn't want to stand there and talk to you because I didn't want anybody to know that we knew each other.
Ooh.
Because that's a high profile, and they figure that if they know a defense attorney, then you must have needed a defense attorney. Right, Eddie? Yeah. Why would you have a defense attorney if you didn't have to defend yourself?
That's right.
Exactly. And she was keeping your relationship confidential.
That's right.
From prying eyes or public eyes, especially at a Lakers game. So that makes some sense. I might have not thought of that.
Right.
So
well,
kudos to her for having thought of that.
Okay, so what mistakes do people make when they need a defense attorney and they make mistakes finding one?
Well, the first mistake most people charged with a crime make is they talk to the police.
Oh.
That's the biggest mistake that anybody can ever make.
Right.
Because those Miranda rights are there for a reason. And when they give you Miranda rights, you should zip up your lips and just be quiet and say, I want a lawyer before I start talking to you guys. Because police are never going to use your statement to exonerate you or to make your case go away. Mm-hmm. They're always trying to get something on you to try to make you incriminate yourself. So never talk to the police.
Okay, and I think maybe television shows or TV makes it look like what the cop's your friend and he's trying to help you get off. But the way that a police officer would talk to someone who's been accused of a crime, is it remotely similar to what you see on TV?
Yes, it can be, but some dishonest police officers don't always play by the rules, and they'll try to get you to talk in the vehicle on the way to the jail. Mm-hmm. And then make it look like, oh, he just voluntarily started telling us this stuff.
Do you think that's why sometimes they take, like they took somebody to go eat and to get something to eat? Like maybe they try to make them like, you know, if they take them in the car to get something to eat and they eat and they're back in the car.
I'm your pal.
Yeah, they had some food in their stomach, and they're like, yeah, you know, these guys don't mean me any harm. They're going to try to help me.
Yeah, and because the next step will be in the interview room when they get to the station, they'll give you the Miranda rights and then say, hey, I'm just trying to help you. I'm just looking for you to get out of this. You know, so why don't you tell me your version of what happened?
Okay, so I think that's a very important point. Do not speak to the police officers about anything. Don't even defend yourself or say I wasn't there. Don't say anything, right, Eddie? Not a word.
Nope.
Good
nothing.
Tip.
Just say I want to see a lawyer before I talk to the
and
police
when
about
you,
any
and,
of it.
And when you say I want to see a lawyer, they can't ask you any more questions.
They can ask all the questions they want, but they'll be all inadmissible in a court of law.
There you go. Another good point.
So when you become the hired lawyer, do you have to answer these questions through your client at some point before the trial?
You never have to answer anything that your client has told you because it's all confidential privileged information.
So when you had a client and you met that person maybe for the first time, how long was it before you guys were private or whoever it was and you said, okay, so now is the time? Did you do what they're accusing you of?
Typically, when I would get a case or it would come to my attention, I would end up going to the jail if they had not bailed out or were released. I'd go to the jail and interview my client immediately. And basically talk to them about what happened, why are they there, and all those kind of things.
Okay.
Would you ever have something that a prospective client would say to you that would make you always not represent them? Was there something that about any prospective client that you would not deal with?
No. I would take any case because I felt that I was going to be their buffer from getting some inferior lawyer.
Wow.
Or somebody that was going to dump truck them and just send them to prison or something.
What does
and
it
cooperate mean? With the cops or whatever. Because I knew I was a really good lawyer, a really excellent defense lawyer for criminal cases. And I knew they couldn't get anything better anywhere else.
Wow.
In terms of representation.
Yeah.
So,
that's awesome.
What's dump truck mean? What does dump truck mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a lot of people that get convicted will describe their lawyer as a dump truck that they back the truck in. And sometimes they're called Casey Jones, too. They're driving the train to prison for the authorities or whatever, and they're going to, and in a dump truck, the client is in the back of the truck, and then he's going to back it into the jail and then release the whatever the remote control thing is that dumps all the stuff out of a dump truck and dumps it right there. So I think that's basically the analogy that people charged with crime or get convicted are using when they use the term dump truck.
When they read you your rights, they say if you cannot afford attorney, an attorney will be provided to you with no charge. Is
yes.
a public defender attorney working in your best interest?
Yes, I believe so. All the public defenders I knew were excellent lawyers, and the vast majority of them were better than the private attorneys that I saw people getting.
Wow.
I would cringe at some of the lawyers that I would see come into court and represent their clients, and knew that public defenders were way, way, way better than those people were.
So how would the normal person get through that? How would the normal, is there any tip, like, how would the normal person know whether to take the public defender or a private lawyer? Is there any way?
Well, in order to get a public defender, you have to meet certain low-income requirements or no-income requirements and no-asset requirements.
Ooh, I didn't know that. I don't think anybody knows that because they make it sound like, hey, if you need an attorney, hey, they go, of course, I need an attorney. Well, I'm sorry, you don't qualify for one because you have money and you have this, you have a job and you have that. You're not gonna get a public defender.
Never knew that.
That's right. And that happens on occasion. But public defender offices that I knew about never checked on the veracity of whatever somebody put down on the income statement. They wouldn't send out an investigator and say, hey, go see where this guy lives and see if they got a Cadillac in front of the place or BMW or whatever. They never checked on anybody's income or lack of income sources. If the person said, I don't make a cent and I don't own anything, they never got checked on.
That's a great tip.
And they would be represented. They would be represented by the public defender's office.
There you go right there. So if you're listening, Eddie just said that if you have to fill out, you know, and you have means, but if you put down that you don't have a job or any way to pay an attorney, one will be afforded to you at no charge to yourself. So if you're maybe lying already, just throw another lie in there.
You already got one foot in the jail cell. Let's just go for it.
Huh? yeah, and at least that lie is never going to get you in jail.
When people criticized you for being a defense attorney, what would they say to you?
Typically, the big thing that the normal civilian who's not in the business or know about the business would say is, oh, how can you defend a child molester? Or they'd say, how can you defend somebody that is guilty or told you that they did it? How can you do that? And to me, it's easy because the Constitution says that everybody's entitled to the most aggressive and best representation they can get in a criminal case. And it's the duty of the state to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this person has committed these charged crimes. And so I took that whole thing really seriously all my career. I represented people. The way I did it was I put myself in my client's shoes and said, what would I want in a lawyer to do for me if I was in their situation? So it was very, every case for me was very personal.
So I don't know if you can answer this, but was there clients that actually said, hey, I did this, and you go, okay, this is what we're going to do. Is that how it works, or how, or did they just never say it?
No, there were plenty. Maybe 90% of my clients told me they did it. And then what we'd work on is I'd look at the police report and look at any other evidence and determine whether they could prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And if I saw that, it looks like they got a slam dunk case here against my person who's telling me they admitted it. And typically they would tell the police they did it too. Even after Miranda rights. And so then you're pretty much handcuffed. And then what you're doing is trying to figure out the best deal that this person can get if they're convicted of something, or try to lessen the charges. Because typically I found that DA's offices throw the book at people or exaggerate the charges in contemplation of getting a conviction of something, even if it's lesser, because there are DA departments that promote people by how many convictions they get. And they won't promote them unless they got a certain percentage of convictions.
Well, everybody in here is shaking their heads, because I think as you were saying that, we started to put the puzzle together in our heads, and we're like, you know what? That's why they give you charges. You're like, geez, man, I'm going away forever. Well, maybe you're not. Maybe you're just going away for this because it's, they've shot for the moon.
Yeah, and they do that. Basically they have to have some reason to believe they can charge that in theory, because district attorneys are held to the same code of ethics that defense attorneys are held to. Mm-hmm. Although I happen to believe that DAs don't really adhere to the code of ethics like I did, at least.
But if a DA, if someone in the DA office is an advocate for one type of crime, and somebody goes in there with that type of crime, if you get that person in the DA, it's almost like their goal and their mission will be to put you away, right?
Yes, because they do have certain task forces that they're called that are largely funded sometimes by federal funds. So then the county doesn't have to pay for that piece of the budget, and the federal government gets it, And in fact, I remember there were DAs that asked me, said, hey, can we charge something like this on your client just so we can get it on the certain task force because we're federally funded for that.
Right. So you get their little tally mark and move on, right?
Yeah. Little tally mark and they can justify the federal funds coming in. And then they don't have to use county resources. So they can tell the county, oh, our budget is $20 million or $120 million, whatever these budgets are. And the county can then say, okay, we'll do that. And then they know they're getting a federal grant for $40
million. Oh, wow.
And they can hire another 10 attorneys for a certain task force.
Okay, so in closing, when you get arrested, do not talk to the police. Ask for a lawyer.
Yes.
And?
Absolutely. Every time.
And?
Don't tell them how much money you make or assets you have if you want a public defender.
Well.
that's alleged.
Yeah, that's a smart way to run that. But typically a lot of folks who get arrested don't have money or are on the lower spectrum of the income levels.
Let's close with, what's the biggest mistake someone who gets arrested makes?
Well, to me, it's that if it's not, they should have run faster so they wouldn't get arrested. If it's not that, then it's talking to the police. I've seen it too many times that people open their mouth and then end up convicting themselves.
Eddie Gomez, thank you for being a part of Oh My God High.
Awesome to talk to you, Eddie.
And pleasure.
Because you're a guest of Oh My God High, we are giving you a 1-year auto detailing of your car from Janky Toyota. Remember, if it goes right, it's janky. That's Eddie's golf swing.
Yeah, that's a golf swing.
Every time he swings, I go, janky Toyota.
Right.
If it goes right, it's a janky.
Right.
You got it at janky.
I'll detail your car.
All right, man. Thanks, dude. I might see you this weekend out there with Cedric.
Cool. That'd be great.
All right.
Great talking to you, Eddie.
Right on.
Have a good one.
I appreciate the time, man.
Bye-bye. You got it. Anytime.
That's a wrap. Brian. You know, I told you last weekend, and I appreciate all your time with me. It might be because it's the mortality thing I said, but I love you, man.
I love you too.
You doing this with me.
Thanks for
this is fun.
Me. This is a blast. I love you. I can listen to you talk all day long.
Yeah, well.
It's good stuff.
I can't even fucking listen to you do a promo.
I know, exactly. I can't get through one. But make sure, please, if you want to ask George any question that's on your mind, ask him for any advice. It's 818-533-1843.
Are any questions off limits? Fuck yeah, they are. So have some respect.
But you can ask him. We'll filter.
All right, we're out. Thank you for tuning in to Am I God High? And tell all your friends, wherever you get a podcast, Apple, Spotify. So thank you, everybody, for listening to Am I God High on All Things Comedy.